Austin, Texas.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, and today we have a couple of topics. We're looking for your input as well. First up, we're going to have residents in a St. Petersburg neighborhood who are fighting to save some mature live oak trees from developers. I'd like to hear from you if you have a similar issue in your neighborhood. Later on in the show, we'll continue our discussion on migrants, including the recent reporting by the Tampa Bay Times that arrests of non-criminal undocumented immigrants have been on the rise. And we'll take your calls. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. I don't think I got to any phone calls last week, so we're definitely going to get to calls early on in this show. You can also email your comments or questions to DJ at WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Well, we begin the show with a fight in St. Petersburg between developers and residents in the Allendale Terrace neighborhood. The developer is building several homes on the former site of a single older house on 35th Avenue North. There are at least two mature live oak trees on that property. And I should tell you at the beginning that I requested an interview with the developer, Terralon Homes, but I've not gotten a response by the time we went to air. In a moment, we'll talk live with a neighbor who's fighting to save these trees, and I want to hear your stories. Is this happening in your neighborhood? Again, the number to call in is 813-239-9663. Before we hear from her, I'm going to play an interview that I did at the site last week with St. Petersburg City Council member Darden Rice.
Well, behind me, you see one of the new homes by Terralon Homes. There previously was a large, big, beautiful home that was torn down. And now we have three or four houses being kind of slid into this spot. And what you see behind me is a beautiful, healthy, live oak tree with over a 30-inch diameter. And it's estimated to be between 60 and 80 years old, which means it's still in the first half of its lifetime. And we have right here what is ground zero and the battle between trying to preserve our beautiful grand oak trees against developers who want to take them down. This developer actually got a variance and was able to build this new house with a closer lot line. As you can see, this house is closer to the street than all of the other houses down the rest of the street. They had to get a variance to do that. They got the variance because it was a reward for protecting this live oak tree that's behind me. And now this morning, my constituent had to stand in front of chainsaws to tell a company to stop from taking it down, the tree down, because the developer says that state law allows them to remove the tree. Now, that's not exactly the case. The developer has to prove that the tree is causing a danger or diseased. We don't have that paperwork from their arborist to prove that yet, but this is the conundrum, and this is where we're falling between the cracks between laws that do not protect trees and state laws written for developers to allow them to take down whatever type of old, beautiful tree willy-nilly. Thank goodness my neighbor and our citizen, Ann Dowling, was here today to keep an eye on it and get in the way and interfere, because if she wasn't, this beautiful tree behind us would be gone.
What would be the consequences if there's no disease or no damage caused by the tree and the developer just took it down and then paid a fine or something? What would be the consequences?
It's a minimal fine right now. I believe it's either $500 or $1,000. So the fine is so small, it just becomes the cost of doing business.
But they applied for the variance and got the variance. Would that somehow be voided if the tree is torn down?
Well, how do you void it? They've already built the house. It also doesn't make sense. They've clearly designed and built this house around the tree to emphasize it. Maybe a future buyer would see this neighborhood, see that it has a beautiful oak canopy, and would want that tree. This is spitefulness from the developer, and we're going to fight it every step of the way.
The developer said it won't be torn down today. Is that right? What about tomorrow?
Right, exactly. I mean, goodness, it's a good thing we were paying attention. We have to stay on our toes to watch what they're doing, and that is what is so frustrating.
Well, that was St. Petersburg City Council member Darden Rice, who I spoke to a couple of days ago on 35th Avenue North in the Allendale Terrace neighborhood, and she was talking about some development that happened, and she also mentioned a neighbor, and joining us now on the phone is that neighbor, Ann Dowling. She lives across the street from this tree, and she's vice president of Allendale Terrace Neighbors United Association. I think I got the neighborhood association correct. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Ann.
Thank you.
How was I? Did I get the name of your group right?
You did.
Well, tell us, why is this tree so important to you? Ann, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I can now. Why is this tree so important to you?
The tree is important to me because, first of all, it forms a part of our green canopy in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is going to help fight climate change down the line. And it adds to the beauty and the value of the homes in our area. It's been here a lot longer than I have. It's almost 80 years old. And it's also important to me because it represents kind of what's wrong with what's going on in St. Petersburg right now with development and citizen activists their voices really being squashed by inability to have access to backroom deals that allow developers to do what they want to do. But most importantly, it's because it's a tree that's worth saving in and of itself for its inherent beauty.
So when I interviewed Darden Rice, she was talking about a new Florida law. What can you tell us about what's called House Bill 1159 and what that has to do with trees?
Well, I am definitely not an expert on 1159, but I do know its nickname is the Private Property Protection Act. And I believe, and I could be wrong, that some lawmaker out in a little more south from us got in a snit because he couldn't take a tree down on his property. And so he instituted something that would allow, it basically bars local municipalities from regulating removals of trees on residential properties. Of course, as Darden mentioned, there is the quote-unquote dangerous designation. But it really puts a thorn in the side of people who want to keep the green canopy green because it allows the homeowner and the property owner to just go out and find any arborist to tell them they can take the tree down.
And you were in that situation the other day, the day that I just maybe an hour or less after, right before I visited, and the people had come to cut down the tree, but did you stand in the way?
I did, and we knew we had fought to save that tree. We knew the tree had been used to secure a variance against a setback variance, and I also knew that by the gentleman who showed up waving around paperwork that didn't look official, that he didn't have the right to cut down the tree, even under House Bill 1159's very lax, no standards at all for permits, really. So it turned out that was true. Terralon did not have any of their permits in place. They neglected to mention to anybody that they had used the tree to secure a variance. And lo and behold, it turns out that, according to Terralon, the arborist was the one who was supposed to show up, not the tree cutting company. And they were going to just say, mea culpa, oh, we're so sorry, pay a minimal fine, and we would have lost an 80-year-old tree.
We're speaking with Ann Dowling. She's vice president of the Allendale Terrace Neighbors United Association, and we're talking about a property that's being developed. New houses are being built there. Well, maybe in a bit we'll talk about the old house that was there before, but you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, and I want to hear if this is something that's going on in your neighborhood. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And Ann, so you've mentioned the setback variance, and so did council member Darden Rice. And let's go into that a little bit. Usually when you go in a neighborhood, you see there's space between the road and houses. And here, that space was allowed to be reduced because the developer promised to protect this tree.
Right. And so if you look on 35th Avenue North, the houses are set pretty far back. It's very gracious. It allows for walking and pretty sidewalks. And this house juts into and cuts the sight line off down the street. It's a significant, we're not talking 7 inches, 8 inches, 12 inches. We're talking feet, 15 feet, 12 to 15 feet into the sight line of the rest of the homes. And they secured that variance by claiming that they would protect this tree, which was designated as a grand live oak, which means it has a diameter at 4 feet high of 30 inches or more. Originally, Terralyn argued with us about whether or not the diameter, this tree did qualify as a grand oak. They gave up that fight, and that should have been the end of it, because they should have had to save it because it was a grand oak. Then they turned around and capitalized on that designation to get their setback.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you know, I spoke with you a little bit the other day, and I think that you might feel that it was kind of disingenuous of them if they were going to get this setback and then cut down the tree anyway.
Yes, you're not putting words in my mouth. Disingenuous is the nicest word that I could come up with. In addition, it turns out now that the development review department, did not go through the proper steps. At least that's how it looks right now. Usually you're required to notify the neighbors within 200 feet about a variance. There's a hearing. Neighbor input is expected. This setback and tree issue was never brought to the attention of neighbors. We never had the opportunity to speak about it, and it only came to light without proper notice.
Our guest is Ann Dowling. She's Vice President of Allendale Terrace Neighbors United Association in St. Petersburg. And you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. It's 12:17 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. And we're going to take some calls. We're hearing from Ann about trees in her neighborhood that developers want to tear down. And I should say, we got this email from Dennis Plews, and he says, please tell us the name of the developer and where his office is. And Terralyn Homes, Tarallon, is based in Tampa, is my understanding. I reached out to them this morning. I have not heard back from them. I was hoping to tape an interview to play on the show or have them on, but they did not get back to me yet. So I'll keep that posted on our website if I do hear back from them later. So that's the answer to your question, Dennis. Let's go now to John in Port Richey. Hi, John. What do you have a story that you'd like to tell about trees in your neighborhood?
No, I really don't have any trees in my neighborhood, which is unfortunate. I just find it interesting. I just wonder what kind of person this developer is that wants to do this. It sounds like it really dovetails well in with the Bill Moyer interview about it's just about greed. But more importantly, the guest there said something that the variance was gotten under false pretense. And the other thing, too, was that the process of getting the variance wasn't adhered to. So I hope there would be some sort of investigation into that process, first of all. But second, since the variance was received under false pretense, is there a way to sort of repeal that variance? And then since that variance would not have been given in the first place and because of the false pretenses, make the developer take down the house?
All right. Thank you for that call, John. I'm going to ask our guest here, Ann, about this. But I should say that I did ask something to this effect from Darden Rice, the council member that represents this district, and she essentially told me there's really nothing you can do at this point. Ann, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a group of us led by a different neighbor of mine who's fantastic, who has been holding the city's feet to the fire on this issue. And his name is Hardy Bryan, and he has been following up with that, going through the right channels, because that's what we do. And what we have asked for is, please, city attorney or somebody, explain to us what happens in this situation. There are certain things you can do. A developer can, if you take their permit away to build and put a stop work order in, that's going to delay them, and that's going to hurt them financially. So there are certain things you can do when a developer has done something unacceptable under a permit. And I think that that is the way it is going. I know that Mayor Christman has been contacted, and he is supposed to be working out a compromise with Terralon. And I am looking forward as much as anybody to hear the results of that compromise. I have to give some credit, some major credit, to Darden Rice for sticking with this neighborhood since the house was taken down on the former site of 810 35th Avenue North. She's been a fantastic advocate for the neighborhood.
I have an emailer that writes in. Phyllis says, I suggest you contact Terralon Homes. What you are broadcasting are lies. Please call the developer and get the real story. This is ridiculous. So I just want to remind everyone again that I did call Terralon this morning and had not heard back when I came to the studio. Thomas writes in, they need to be arrested. That's what Thomas says from email. So our guest here is Ann Dowling. She's vice president of Allendale Terrace Neighbors United Association. And we're going to take another call. If you'd like to call in and tell us about your neighborhood, the number is 813-239-9663. And here's Janice in Pasco County. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I have a story about an oak tree. When I lived in a townhouse in Tampa, and there was in townhouses, they're kind of connected, you know? So there was this big, beautiful old oak tree that was in the back of my place, but it kind of hung over, you know, my next door neighbor. And they didn't like it because they thought if a hurricane came, it was going to fall on their house, blah, blah, blah. But I liked it because it gave me shade and it was beautiful. So the Townhouse Association had made arrangements to have some of the trees cut down, and the company had permits to cut down some of the trees in the, you know, neighborhood. But somehow my next door neighbor, when they came out there, said that this was one of the trees that was supposed to be cut down. And, when I got home from work and, you know, half a tree was gone, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So I stayed home the next morning when they got out there to finish cutting it down. And I asked, you know, where's your permit? And they didn't have one for that tree. So they had to stop. And I guess from the county, I guess, an arborist came out and looked at the tree and said it wasn't sick and they shouldn't have cut it. But now they've cut too much off to even save the tree. So they had to cut the whole tree down. And I don't know if they got fined or what, but I got the feeling that they didn't have any consequences as far as fines or anything like that. And it was very sad.
All right, Janice, thank you for telling us that story. I appreciate that story. And so, Ann, that's something I think that the reason that you stood in front of the tree the other day is because you were worried about something that like that might happen, is that, you know, some damage might happen to the tree. And then at that point, there's nothing else you could do.
Exactly. And exactly what Janice said, I was just lucky enough to be home. Otherwise, even if I had gone on a morning walk, the tree would be gone. Janice didn't have that opportunity, and I feel really badly for her.
And you did interact with the company that day, and the day that I was there, the person that you were interacting with was being very reasonable, right? They were able to work with you to stop things that day.
Terralon has a site manager named Jim. He is wonderful. He is very community-minded, and I have to give him credit. We've had a very civil relationship since I live in the house directly across the street. So he's been terrific. I cannot fault him in any way.
And we have an email here from Barbara who says, I'm with John. Tear down the house, find the builder, and declare the lot a neighborhood park. So that's a thought from Barbara. If you have something you'd like to say, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to take a phone call from Craig in Largo. Hi, Craig.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I noticed in downtown St. Pete, in areas where they allow tall buildings like Beach Drive and right along the waterfront, the buildings are set back further. I mean, from the street, where the, you know, pavement, where the cars travel, all the way to the building, sometimes it's 50 feet. There's wide tree lawns and green spaces and wide sidewalks. Because they let them build these buildings so much taller, they're able to set them back, and that leaves room for canopy. Whereas some of the newer developments that are going on in St. Petersburg now, further away from the water, it seems like they're restricting the height so much and allowing the builders to build so close to the sidewalk that they're not really leaving a lot of room for canopy. So I don't know why we worry so much about height restrictions. It seems like we should allow them to build taller on smaller footprints as opposed to short and wide, because we're kind of wasting so much land by building short and wide. So that's my comment.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Craig. And Anne, would you like to weigh in on Craig's suggestion?
I don't know much about the height. I can tell you there's shading issues that come with very, very tall buildings, and that can present a problem for other types of problems. And I think the question is do you really want to become a city that is known for giant tall buildings, or do you want to remain St. Petersburg with a nice mix and the look that we have right now?
And his suggestions were referring to the city area, where this is definitely a residential area. There's no businesses nearby on this street, at least. It's a completely residential area, and you would have different aesthetics for those two different types of areas.
Yes, and that's part of what makes the neighborhoods in St. Petersburg so special. Each one has an aesthetic. You know, when you're in Old Northeast, you can tell with the Cade Allens and the wide brick streets that you're in Allendale. You know when you're in Distant Heights or Uptown, and that's really the neat part about it. And when you allow these lot-line-to-lot-line houses that look all the same, and you cut the trees down that have made each neighborhood unique, you are now erasing part of the character of every neighborhood.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest on WMNF's Midpoint today, Anne. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Sean. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. And is there anything else that people should know about this tree and your fight to save it?
There are some really great committees that are out there that are working, like the City Beautiful Committee and a whole bunch of people who are dedicated. And if anybody wants to contact me, I will put you in touch with them. They're a motivated, wonderful group of citizen activists. I clearly do not stand alone. We are a good root system with a lot of branches going out.
How can people get in touch with you?
You may use my email, acderek@aol.com. And I'm also on Nextdoor under Ann Hess, my husband's last name.
Great. Thanks so much, Ann. I appreciate
it. Really appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ann Dowling is Vice President of Allendale Terrace Neighbors United Association. And we'll post photos and videos of the tree and of the development on our website later this afternoon at WMNF.org. And we're going to be right back after this short music break. We'll hear some Bob Marley right now, and then we'll talk about how the U.S. government is treating migrants. And the number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can email dj@WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Thanks so much for listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. back to WMNF 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 12:30 in the afternoon, and I want to... Oh, first, before we go to our next guest, I want to tell you about another news story. I'm going to follow it throughout the day and update you this afternoon, but I want to let people know that on Facebook, Spectrum Bay News 9 has posted photos of several beached whales on Madeira Beach this morning. The caption says that beachgoers and Clearwater Marine Aquarium officials are trying to help. They look like smallish whales to me. I'm not a whale expert. I can't tell you exactly what they are. And it looked like there were at least two or three. I don't know very many other details, but I'll definitely try to follow up throughout the day. I thought it's important enough to break in to let you know about that. But right now we're going to turn to our next topic. It's the mistreatment of migrants by the U.S. government, especially during the last few years, the Trump administration. In yesterday's print version of the Tampa Bay Times, we read about the story that the Trump administration says that it targets criminal immigrants for deportation, but many people, especially in Florida, have no convictions when they are arrested for migration crimes. The Times reports that arrests by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement of non-criminal, undocumented immigrants have been on the rise since Donald Trump became president. In Florida, Hillsborough County trails only Miami-Dade County for the most total arrests and the number of arrested who did not have any previous offense on record. Even though the president suggests his administration targets criminals for detention and deportation, the Times found that detentions of non-criminals surged as tens of thousands of immigrants without any convictions were arrested. So our next guest is Desiree Lynn. She's with Love Has No Borders, and we'll talk about how migrants are treated in the U.S. So welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint, Desiree.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
I'm really glad you came in because I think that a lot of people want to talk about this topic. It's really on a lot of people's minds how people are being treated right now. So what can you tell us? Let's start with this study that the Times just published. How do the findings of this Tampa Bay Times study fit in with what you've been seeing as an advocate for immigrants?
Well, the article basically encapsulates the statistical fact that Florida is leading the charge numbers-wise in immigration arrests. The reason is because Florida is viewed, although we don't border another country, we're surrounded on three sides by water, so within a 100-mile perimeter, it allows for these like citizen, non-judge-signed warrants. So they can go and arrest people that they suspect that they racially profile of being status threatened or undocumented and then take them in. So pretty much throughout Florida, we've been seeing like the contention of Donald Trump in placing a dragnet across the country against immigrant and undocumented folks.
And so I introduced you as being with Love Has No Borders, but you're also with a group called Occupy ICE. Tell us what those two groups are all about.
So Love Has No Borders and Occupy ICE or Abolish ICE are both movements that stand in solidarity with those with undocumented immigrant communities that are being increasingly under attacked by vitriolic anti-immigrant propaganda and rhetoric by current and past administrations, and the increasing arrests and now mass incarceration of immigrants and criminalization of them for exercising their freedom of movement. So what we do, we're grassroots. We do things like dual power activities while resisting these current conditions, accelerating conditions. We also work inside of neighborhoods with free markets and doing things like driving lessons and driving people to school, helping them get their children registered for schools and things like this. So we're building relationships inside of the community as well as resisting the conditions that make it dangerous for them to be here in our communities.
And anytime you're a newcomer to an area, there's a certain amount of disorientation, and so that's one of the things that you're helping to do is to help people get acclimated to a new area.
Yeah, and absolutely what we're doing is we're helping to amplify and permeate our communities with what already is that most people here want to welcome people. We want people to be out of harm's way. We want people to be able to traverse borders if it means their lives and their families' lives to be able to get somewhere safe and build a new life. We want to make that the norm. We want to make people feel welcome despite, this prevention, through all these, criminal ways that they treat immigrants and all this toxic rhetoric that they've built up around them.
And if you listen to read Donald Trump's tweets or listen to his speeches or listen to some of his supporters, you're going to hear something to the effect of that borders should be closed and that people shouldn't be traveling. But, you know, I haven't read the articles yet, but the front page, the front cover of this month's National Geographic magazine is essentially about how, because of all the things that are happening in the world, whether it's climate disruption or whether it's wars or things, essentially the humanity is on the move, is I think what the title of the magazine's issue is in National Geographic, that everyone is all over the world, there are people who are migrating because of these disasters that are around them, whether they're man-made disasters like climate change or wars, or whether it's just weather disasters, etc. So there's nothing really that you can do to stop that, unless we've somehow fixed all the problems in the world and made some sort of utopia. So people are going to move, people are going to migrate, and now the question is, how do we deal with that, and how do we, what do you think, what are some suggestions that how we can make that process easier?
Well, first of all, this administration and past administrations haven't calibrated their actions based on the numbers of people that they're incarcerating. Criminalizing the act of movement is wrong. Despite the vitriol and the poison and the toxic environment that Trump has tried to build up, it is absolutely legal for people who are in a social or political disaster, whose lives are in danger, to present themselves to officials at a border and seek asylum. That's not a criminal act. When Trump says that the country is permeated with criminal, aliens, this is the language that he, permeates the country with, when he pushes that narrative, what the bulk of those numbers constitute are people that have brake light out, that have been pulled over, traffic infractions, immigration infractions, because they haven't waited in line for arbitrary application processes because their children's lives were in danger and their lives were in danger, and we don't think that they should have to. So I think that before, during, and even after this criminalization and this campaign and attack and propagandizing of movement as being criminal, people necessarily need to move. And the only thing they're doing is building synergy between themselves and things like human smuggling, exploitation of children, sexual trafficking, like true issues that are happening and the dangers that people are facing, like the young man with his daughter, his infant daughter, that drowned to death while trying to cross a river to get here to safety. That shouldn't happen. And that's happening every single day. So what we're trying to push is the normalization of crossing borders to get somewhere safe. It's not a criminal act, and Trump is trying to necessarily make it that way. So he's building up all of this toxicity around it when, it's a racial profiling issue, because you or I driving, as non-immigrant, non-people of color, white passing, we're not going to be pulled over, much less arrested, for having a brake light out. So, we want to push that migration is a normal thing. It always has been, for work, for seasonal opportunities, and for safety and for life. And we want an end to the concentration camps. We want an end to criminalization. We want an end to mass roundups and the psychological warfare that goes with, the kind of vitriol and rhetoric that Trump is putting out.
Our guest is Desiree Lynn with Love Has No Borders, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:39 in the afternoon, and you can join this conversation by calling 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf. You can call 813-433-0885. And we have a guest on the line. We might as well take a phone call right now, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
And Debbie in Tampa. Hi, Debbie. Would you like to talk about the migration topic, or are you calling in about the trees?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about the immigration issue. Thank you, Desiree, for speaking out about this. I just wanted to make two points. The first is that with the fake capitalism that we currently have, and people like Trump and conservatives tout as the savior of the world, that won't work without free migration of labor. Like, the fact that they are putting that stop at the border is counterintuitive to the way capitalism is supposed to work. Not that I'm a huge fan of capitalism, but I just want to put that out there. And then secondly, and I don't know if Desiree actually might who might have want to point this out too, is there is a group on Facebook that is that was created where we can actually coordinate trips to Homestead, because we have a concentration camp here in Florida. And a lot of folks from Tampa, a lot of activists have been going down there with the vigils. There's vigils all day long, every day down there. We need more people. The group is Tampa for Witness Homestead. It's a group, not a page, on Facebook. You can just request to be joined. And you can connect with other folks to carpool down there, but also be updated on weekly vigils outside the ICE office, which Desiree and a bunch of others have done in the past, too. So I wanted to bring those 2 points, that capitalism doesn't work without free migration of labor, and that you can do something. Join that group, be updated, go to Homestead if you can, and or join the protest here in Tampa on a weekly basis.
So, Debbie, before I go to Desiree, I want to ask you, have you been to Homestead, and what did you see?
No, I haven't been able to head down yet.
Okay, I appreciate it. And if you have been to the Homestead detention camp, I've interviewed one person who was there, and she told me, and it's on our website, about what's there. You can listen to that. But if you have a story to tell about what you saw there, give us a call, 813-239-9663. We have another call. We have activist Mark in St. Petersburg. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
I just disagree with the woman that was talking about, you get stopped, you get pulled over by the cops because you have a brake light out or a headlight out. Well, I'm white, and I've been pulled over for having a brake light out and ticketed, having a headlight out and ticketed. It happens to everyone, not just minorities. And I remember one time I was working in a construction job, and I was staying in a hotel in Dunedin, and I walked, it was late at night, it was around midnight, I was watching the MTV Music Video Awards, and I ran out of cigarettes, so I walked to the corner to the 7-Eleven to get cigarettes, and a cop swings around off the street, blocks my path, asks me for my identification, what am I doing here, where am I going? And I told him, and he says, I could arrest you for no reason, and I could arrest you for any reason. I could arrest you for prowling, disorderly conduct, and like 2 other charges, just for buying a pack of cigarettes at 12 o'clock at night. So it happens to everyone.
Right, thanks.
I don't have white privilege. I live paycheck to paycheck. I'm not rich.
Thanks for those points, Mark. All right, Desiree, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a somewhat sadly too common sentiment that people reject white privilege. White privilege absolutely does exist. Racial profiling absolutely does exist. And in this state, we're seeing the intentions of Donald Trump folding out to the maximum effect with these roundups and arrests of immigrants that they're criminalizing for things like brake lights being out because they're being pulled over, because they are being racially profiled, specifically because of things like basic ordering agreements and the synergy between, sheriffs like Bob Gualtieri with ICE and Department of Homeland Security. ICE has been around like pretty much since the post 9/11, criminalization of anyone and everyone who wasn't American. And it took, immigration out from underneath the Justice Department and put it under Department of Homeland Security, which squarely placed it under being suspected terrorist, being suspected criminal. So that is what's happening, and the statistics prove it. And it makes me very sad that concept of we don't have white privilege still permeates our communities today.
And I don't think that, maybe Mark got the impression that you were trying to say that white people are never harassed by the police, because I don't think that that's what your stance is.
Absolutely not. But people of color, by and large, are disproportionately stopped, questioned, detained, arrested, and put in jail. And that's the issue that we need to face. We need to start looking at those issues that they're happening so we can normalize resistance against it.
You're listening to 88.5 FM, and we're having a discussion again about migration and how migrants are treated by the U.S. government. And I want to talk about for a second here about a Los Angeles Times report from April that said that ICE held an American man in custody for nearly 3.5 years, and he's not the only person who's had to prove his citizenship. The newspaper found that Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents repeatedly target U.S. citizens for deportation by mistake. They make wrongful arrests based on incomplete government records, bad data, and lax investigations, and that nearly 1,500 people have been released from ICE custody after investigating their citizenship claims since 2012. Arrests of undocumented immigrants with no criminal records were 7 times the total during the previous administration. That's the largest increase in the country and twice the national average. So this combination of arresting American citizens thinking that they are deportable and just arresting non-criminal people who have migrated across the border, this combination has just led to an uptick in what we see, these detention camps, we see family separation, all these problems that we're seeing now to a degree that we really haven't seen in years.
Yeah. Foundationally, ICE operates from a database that by all accounts is dramatically flawed. They have misspelled names. They have incorrect information. And they routinely operate from this. I think it's 20% of the people that they have targeted have been subsequently released because they had the necessary, you know, paperwork to remain in the country. So if you were operating, say, in a medical context under those kind of statistics and that kind of foundational information, that would be something that, you know, a populace would rally against. But sadly, ICE continues to perpetuate these mass roundups. They continue to place this dragnet and this, you know, hunt for people of color, for people suspected of not having immigration status, and then they subsequently arrest them. And what ICE does is they don't operate on, I'm going to arrest you because I've been able to prove that you're undocumented. They operate on, I haven't been able to prove that you're not, so I'm going to go ahead and we're going to detain you. And in the space of you being detained and you've being proved innocent or being proved that you are able to remain in this country, you know, in that interim, people have lost their jobs. People have been separated from their children. People have been strip searched. They've had their medications confiscated from them. They've suffered inside of these detention centers. They've been harassed. They've faced all kinds of issues if they haven't already been deported by the time ICE figured it out. And the regular routine line that they put out in the you know, aftermath of this is, oops, we made a mistake, but we are committed to the utmost, you know, certitude of doing our job to the best of its ability. And that's the byline that comes out. And we're living these Orwellian times where, you know, peace is war, or war is peace, you know, where things are just basically, nothing is calibrated except for the language to make it okay. That's it. But these conditions are still continuing and they're accelerating, and we're trying to stop that. And what helps to normalize these things are business owners like Charles Prather and St. Pete, who profits from it, PNC Bank, who profits from it. These institutions and our communities that profit from it and work in synergy with it help to normalize those conditions that people suffer and die under.
Our guest is Desiree Lynn with Love Has No Borders. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. This is the Midpoint Monday show. It's 12:49 in the afternoon. I want to read a text that came in from Mark in St. Pete. And he says that thinking white privilege is purely financial idea is a perfect example of white privilege. And he points out that he's a white guy living in South Tampa. So thank you for that text, Mark. Craig writes, we need to change the narrative about what white privilege is. For some reason, white males believe privilege equals a paycheck. This is utterly false. Thank you. So Craig, echoing what Mark had said. And let's go to the phone lines. Let's take Jason in Waimama. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'd like to point out, yes, love has no boundaries or whatever she said, but countries do. I believe she's a little out of touch with the Hispanic community and the immigrants that come over here. Me, myself, I grew up in a rural farm town. There might have been 5 or 10 white kids in my whole grade growing up. So I grew up and I've seen they're not refugees from bad things happening in their country. They're refugees for economic reasons. they're not running from crime most of the time. They're running here because our social programs are so good, and they have mastered how to manipulate it, like not getting married, having up to six kids, trading Social Security numbers, getting jobs at the farms, and getting two paychecks per person. So these are good families. I grew up with them. You know, mom, dad, Catholic families, good people. But they're not here because they're running from things. They're here because they want to take advantage of the government. And she points out how ICE is doing all these bad things and only 20% of the people they go after deserve, you know, to be prosecuted. Well, if they didn't break the laws in the first place, then ICE wouldn't be making these mistakes. So those people should be mad at the other ones that are coming over here and not going about it in the right funnel, you know, the proper way to do it. They're running for economic reasons, and they have to go through Mexico. So you've got El Salvador, Honduras, all these other countries. Why don't they stop in Mexico? Well, they don't stop in Mexico because they know that the economy isn't going to support them like it will in America. Because if your husband is beating you or beating your kids and you live in California, you don't need to move to another country. You could probably move over to New York or move to Florida and get away from that guy or whatever situation you're in. So the fact that we're saying that all these people are running for something is a complete lie. It's all economics, and they know what they're doing. They'll even go back and forth.
All right, thanks, Jason.
Let me just, if I can, respond to that. That's almost verbatim from Trump's campaign trail talks and his racist, toxic talking points. The point is, those points of view that are flawed, that are toxic, that are racist, that are nativist, that are nationalist, have taken up too much space in the national dialogue. And I won't dignify it with a response because we're trying to normalize a culture of resistance to ideas like the ones that you tout that didn't come from you, that came from Trump's numerous talks on the campaign trail, and the same kind of toxicity that he promotes at all of his campaign talks.
If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. We're talking about migration, and I should point out that I got an email this morning from Gulf Coast Legal Services. They weren't able to join us on the line today, but they say that they've seen a surge in clients in response to the nationwide news of increased immigration raids and deportations. They have a small office in Waimama, and they say that in just 6 months, they've helped almost 200 clients. So nearly 200 people in just the small community of Waimama, which is in Southeast Hillsborough, have needed the legal services of Gulf Coast Legal Services, and they've had a surge because of all these legal claims that are coming up. Also, I want to say that NBC News is reporting that active duty U.S. troops are now stationed inside the Border Patrol's holding facility in Donna, Texas. These U.S. troops are monitoring migrant adults and children from just a few feet away. And that's according to two current and former defense officials. A Congress member says that move comes close to violating the Posse Comitatus law, which is a 100-year-old federal law. So that information from NBC News. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, that law basically means power of the state. What it does essentially is it says that while military bodies can support Customs and Border Patrol and can support law enforcement, they can't actually enforce those laws for them. So they're skirting this line, which is what I was saying, the point I'm trying to make about non-calibration. They're skirting this line of law, which they see as being negotiable. They, meaning the Trump administration and their like, and ICE and these bodies that enforce borders. They're skirting the law, which they find to be negotiable, and putting military bodies in front of unarmed refugee survivors of political and social disasters who are in cages, and have put them there, and their official response is that they're being placed there just a few feet away, armed and standing on raised podiums, watching them to monitor for medical crises or emergent medical crises that come up. The point is that they're there 24/7. They're there and people are dying constantly inside of these concentration camps. They are breaking these laws by normalizing military action and intervention against, you know, a population inside of U.S. borders, which is what the law states they cannot do. And like other laws that Trump has skirted and his administration has skirted, it's, it's largely not taken to task, or at least it hasn't been so far.
Our guest is Desiree Lynn with Love Has No Borders. We're taking calls at 813-239-9663. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. This is Midpoint Monday. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. And we have Chris in Sarasota has been holding a while. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Shauna Desiree. Great topic, very volatile. You sound very versed. I guess two questions I would have, the position of your organization. Would you agree that President Obama also deported illegals?
Yes. And okay. Please don't use the term illegals. Thank you.
Okay. Aliens.
Please don't use the word aliens. Thank you.
Okay. Would you also agree, or I guess, what would be your position? Would you agree that there is a human trafficking segment? Now, it might be 2%, it might be 98%, but would you agree that there is an organized operation to help or to smuggle people into our country?
1,000%. I would agree that there's a synergy. Okay. I would agree that there's a synergy between Trump and his policies, as well as Obama and his policies, as well as past presidents and their policies. I'm not a Democrat touting, you know, the liberal argument. What I'm working on is a human rights crisis, which is absolutely unfolding. Now, human trafficking operations, absolutely they exist.
Okay.
Sexual exploitation of children exist. All of these issues exist, but the reason that they exist and the reason that they accelerate and the reason that they're empowered is because of these very policies that make it a criminal act for someone to present themselves at the border and apply for asylum. That's why these organizations exist.
Agreed. But you have you ever traveled internationally?
Absolutely, I have. Have you?
And absolutely. As a matter of fact, my wife is French. So you understand that you carry a passport, correct? You have been fingerprinted.
You know, hey, I'm going to move on because we're not talking about people who are traveling. And, you know, we all have... A lot of us who are lucky enough to have traveled know how it works to go from country to country when you're just traveling. That's not what our conversation is right now. So I appreciate that, but let's move on. We have Andy in Dunedin. Hi, Andy. Do you have a comment that you can make quickly?
Yeah, just happy Monday, guys. Yeah, that previous caller saying that the people want to come here for economic reasons. I don't buy it. I mean, if... When you have NAFTA, when you push NAFTA down into these countries, Mexico and these other places, and destabilize it and destroy their farmers down there for big corporate farms, when you go to Central America and destabilize their governments, I mean, who would want to leave their country and their friends and family to not know, you know, to go to a strange place? Certainly not me, although right now I'd love to be able to move to Nova Scotia, and I would do it in a heartbeat if I thought I could. But these are some of the hardest working, nicest, wonderful people I've ever met. I've spent a lot of time in Central America, and they're not coming up here just because, you know, some of these Trump people, they go online and they read, oh, they're getting $2,100 a month, blah, blah, this, and all kind of, that's such BS. Okay, these people are coming here because we've practically destroyed their way of life, you know, that's what we do, and we're very good at, unfortunately.
Agreed.
Okay. All right, thank you for that call, Andy. I think we have time to take one more. Is it Emily in San Antonio, am I getting your name correct?
Yep.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. I just had a quick question about basically American, like, people that serve jail time and then they're deemed, like, when they're about to be released, they're deemed, there's, like, an immigration issue and then they're being held and detained. How could that happen if they were processed through, like, the judicial system initially and served their time and then be held afterwards?
Sorry, we don't understand the question. Do you mind thinking of another way to phrase it? Or
my question is, I've heard of cases in the past where someone is about to be released from prison and they've, like, served their time, and then when they're about to be released, discovered that maybe there is not documentation, and then they're held and not released into, they're held by, like, an ICE facility.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm sorry, but we've reached the end of the show. I don't have a great answer for you. I apologize. But I do want to thank our guests for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday today. Thanks so much for joining us, Desiree.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
I'm glad you came in. Desiree Lynn is with Love Has No Borders. And I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you're still on hold, Wilson, I didn't get to you. Or if you didn't get a chance to call in, or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813- 8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. And if you missed any of the show, you can watch or listen to it later on our website, wmnf.org/news. You can join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I want to thank our engineers, Frank Knox and Alvaro Montealegre. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening to 88.5 FM.